Welcome to Wild Speculation. I'm Andrew Rising, and I will be your guide on this journey through the strange, wonderful, and sometimes disturbing worlds of speculative fiction. Before we get started with today's episode, I have a quick announcement to make about the podcast. This is something that's been in the works since the beginning of this season, but hasn't been officially finalized until now. Wild Speculation is now being produced by my new company, Wild Speculation Studios, LLC. Wild Speculation Studios is an audio recording company, and in addition to producing the podcast, I record audiobooks and do voiceover work through it. So, if you have any interest in having my voice bring your project to life, contact me at wildspeculationstudios.com. For today's episode, in celebration of Pride Month, I thought I'd do my first queer-centric story for the podcast. As longtime listeners will know, there have been LGBTQ+ characters, even main characters, in the stories before, but none of those stories have been about that. That's going to change with this story. Happy Pride, everyone! The story is very gay, very sensual, but not explicit, so your mileage may vary. And as far as the speculative fiction element in the story, well, it's my first queer-centric story, and I love a good trope, so it's vampires. It was always going to be vampires. So sit back, settle in for some queer romantic goodness, and enjoy. The Proposal. I almost got married once, Samuel said. They were lying in bed, and Samuel was tracing doodles on his lover's back, but now Harold turned with a shocked expression on his face.
Married? You, Sammy? I can't picture you as anything but a charmer who leaves a string of broken hearts wherever you go, unable to be tied down. Who was the lucky guy who almost got you to stay?
Samuel shook his head. Not a guy, a girl. Harold held his breath, hoping Samuel would say more. Sammy had come to the city 10 years before, Harold knew, but that was all. In their 6 months together, Sammy had never spoken of his life before then. Samuel was silent for a moment, then sighed. I wasn't always the man you see before you. I grew up in a small farming village where there was only one definition of living a good life. Work hard, get married, have kids, raise the kids right. Then you get old, and your kids and your savings make sure you're taken care of. Knowing nothing else, I pursued that life, the life I was told I should want. But that all changed the weekend before I got married. I had everything a young man could ask for, or so I thought. I was the second son of the wealthiest farmer in Pulaski. I was engaged to the beautiful Agnes Reynolds, whose father owned the general store. And I had a wonderful group of friends who were taking me to Bloomfield to celebrate my last weekend as a bachelor. So why, despite looking forward to a weekend of staying in an inn, eating and drinking in taverns, and generally having a good time with my friends, did I feel such dread thinking about the future as our wagon bounced towards the larger town?
So have you, Samuel?
I shook myself out of my reverie and looked at Thomas. Have I what? Thomas glanced at James, smirking.
Told you he wasn't listening. Have you, you know, messed about with Agnes at all?
Of course not. There will be plenty of time for that after we get married. My friends laughed, clearly unconvinced.
Come on, you must have done something.
No, nothing.
Not even a little pinch and tickle? Asked James. Not even a good kiss?
Mr. Reynolds would kill me if I did anything like that before next Saturday. You know that.
Well, there'll be no Mr. Reynolds in Bloomfield. We can go to the Spring Festival, dance with some girls, maybe even get a few kisses, drink ourselves into a stupor. Hey, we could even take in the naughtier pleasures at Madame Pellegrew's, and no one back home ever has to know.
As my friends joked about the exploits they would achieve that weekend, I quietly retreated into myself again. How could I explain to my friends that, as beautiful as Agnes was, I didn't feel the same desire to mess about that they apparently did?
I couldn't let my friends know I was unhappy with my idyllic life. Better to be miserable by myself than to drag them down with me. When we arrived in Bloomfield, the town was abuzz with preparations for the spring festival. People were hanging flower garlands on houses and storefronts. A group of men was finishing constructing a stage in the middle of the square, and a band was tuning their instruments. A little girl ran up to our wagon and handed us a flyer.
"Music and dancing starts in an hour, sirs, followed by a performance by Senor Fanny Goes Traveling Troopers, plus more stuff all weekend."
"Thanks, little miss," Thomas said as he took a flyer. "Will you save a dance for me this afternoon?"
The little girl flushed so hard her face was almost as red as her braids.
"You want to dance with me?"
"Of course. A pretty girl like you? Who wouldn't? My name's Tom, by the way. What's yours?"
"Catherine, but everybody calls me Katie."
"Well, Katie, I'll look for you at the dance. Until then, my dear?"
Goodbye.
After we drove the wagon out of earshot and up to the inn, James mumbled,
"Isn't she a bit young for you?"
Thomas laughed.
"Of course she is. I'm not interested in her like that. What kind of creep do you take me for? But there's bound to be some girls our age who will see me treat the scamp with grace and good humor, and then they'll want a turn. So tonight, while you're paying one of Madame Pellegrew's girls for a little companionship, I'll be cozying up to a farmer's daughter or two for free."
I ignored my friend's banter and grabbed the bags off the back of the wagon, not really interested in their posturing. I walked into the inn and approached the counter. "Me and my friends need a room for the weekend. Do you have any available?"
"As it so happens, I have an attic room available and a few cots you can set up there. Fresh out of beds, though."
"No beds," Thomas protested as he and James came through the door. "Girls will take one look at a cot and, oof!"
I shut him up with an elbow to the stomach. "We'll take it, and thank you. This idiot is paying." Thomas rubbed his stomach.
"How much for two nights in your attic room, good sir?"
As Thomas settled the bill with the innkeeper, I handed some of the bags to James and headed up the stairs. About an hour later, after we had set up our cots and settled in, we were drawn back outside by the sound of lively music. The spring festival dance had begun. Thomas's scheme of dancing with Katie to get the attention of the older girls worked, and he spent the rest of the afternoon swarmed by potential partners every time he left the dance floor. But James and I didn't hurt for attention either, whether due to the proximity of our charming friend, our own apparent attractiveness, or a combination of the two. I, however, turned down as many dances as I accepted, finding more joy in watching my friends dance than in being the focus of these beautiful girls' attention. The dancing only made me self-conscious about my abilities and about Agnes back home. I didn't understand how my friends could just enjoy themselves the way they did, but I liked seeing their happiness, watching their eyes flash with joyous mischief, their grins broadening as pretty girls whispered in their ears. I watched my friends feel the things I couldn't feel myself, try as I might. By the time the dancing was over and the town square lay in the pleasant glow of twilight, Thomas had slipped away from the festival with a wink in our direction and each arm around a pretty girl.
"That son of a bitch actually did it," muttered James.
"And now, everyone, it is time to welcome to the stage Senor Fanago's traveling troop,"
Bloomfield's mayor announced from the stage before leading the crowd in applause. A man in a long, dark cloak slowly made his way across the stage and shook hands with the mayor. James rolled his eyes.
"Come on, Sam. It seems we've both struck out with the ladies tonight. Let's head over to Madame Pellegrew's place, and maybe we'll get luckier with the local girls tomorrow."
I almost agreed to go with James. Though I had no desire to avail myself of the pleasures offered by the girls at Madame Pellegrew's, I wanted to stay alone in this crowd even less, and to spend the evening all alone in our room least of all. But just as I opened my mouth to agree, two hooded lanterns shone their spotlights on him, Senor Fanago. He began to speak.
Gentlefolk of Bloomsfield, visitors from the surrounding countryside, I humbly thank you for welcoming my troop to your festival and allowing us to entertain you.
I froze, mouth agape, as I took in everything about Signor Fanego. His deep, rich voice, his piercing eyes that seemed to look straight into my soul, the flash of his perfectly white teeth in the light of the lanterns. My mouth went dry. I longed to stare into his eyes forever, to touch his chiseled face, to listen to him say my,
"Well, are you coming?"
I shook myself out of my reverie and turned to my friend. "Yeah, but I'm going to watch a bit of the show first. You go ahead. I'll catch up." James shrugged.
"Suit yourself."
My attention immediately returned to the stage and the captivating storyteller who stood there.
"Today you celebrate the spring, a time of planting and growing, a time of life and love, a time of birth and rebirth. So I will regale you with a tale of new life, of life from death, and of love conquering all."
I watched, enraptured, as Signor Fanego spun his tale. The players in the troupe joined him on the stage, acting out the story as he told it, and I was surprised to see that they were circus freaks. Or at least that is how I would have seen them in any other context. But as they moved across the stage, there was nothing freakish about them. They were strange, certainly, but also beautiful and graceful, as if only they could give this wonderful performance. A bearded woman with half her face shaved played both the main character's father, Duke Joseph, and his lady love, Lady Anna. Her costume was perfectly tailored to make her appear as one or the other, depending on which direction she was facing. Six dwarfs were decked in armor and fought in a gorgeously orchestrated battle on the small stage. A man so hairy he looked part animal dashed around the stage on all four limbs in a convincing imitation of the main character's loyal dog, Mancho. An albino woman was haunting as the angel Dolingen, who descended from heaven and raised the main character from the dead. And a veritable giant of a man played with terrifying menace the evil Count Moreno, who invaded the Duke Joseph's lands, killed Duke Joseph and the main character, and stole Lady Anna to be his bride. I registered all of this, but my attention was almost entirely on Signor Fanego, who had thrown off his cloak to reveal a shining suit of armor. Even as he told the story, he acted out the part of the main character, Sir Anthony. I sighed as Sir Anthony met and fell in love with Lady Anna. I gasped as Count Moreno invaded, trying to take over Duke Joseph's land. I shouted angrily when Count Moreno attacked again, violating his peace treaty with Duke Joseph. I wept, along with Lady Anna and Mancho, when Sir Anthony died. And when the angel Dolingen brought Sir Anthony back to life and granted him the gifts of amazing strength and speed, the ability to change his form, and even the ability to fly so that he might defeat Count Moreno and rescue his lady love, I cheered. I felt the story of Sir Anthony more deeply than I had ever felt anything in my life. That was what love and loss and reunification were supposed to feel like. But if I was honest with myself, that was not how I felt about Agnes. She was a wonderful girl, smart, funny, kind, very beautiful. But I felt no more affection for her than I did for Thomas and James. Less, even. And after the story of Sir Anthony, I wondered if it was fair to Agnes, or to myself, to go through with the wedding when I didn't feel what Sir Anthony felt for Lady Anna. But maybe that was just a story. Maybe real people don't ever feel that way, except through stories like this. Maybe if I broke things off with Agnes, it would be for the sake of something that doesn't really exist. But I had to know. By the time I had come to that conclusion, the troupe had left the stage, and the festival-goers were helping clean up the town square in preparation for the next day's festivities, while the band played more music. I wove my way through the crowd, searching for Signor Fanego and his troop, so that I could ask if his story contained truth, or was just a beautiful lie. But the troop had already loaded their wagons and were rolling out of Bloomfield and into the night. I had missed my chance. Disappointed, and questioning everything about my life, I wandered back to the inn, climbed the stairs to the attic room, and sank onto my cot. Life with Agnes wouldn't be so bad. I would learn my future father-in-law's business, and, since Agnes was an only child, one day we'd inherit the store. I would be an important member of the Pulaski community, and wouldn't have to spend my life doing the back-breaking work of farming. Could I really ask for more? Could I? And if I could, what more could I ask for? What did I want out of life? Once I asked the question, the floodgates opened in my mind. I wanted to find love and happiness and heartbreak like in the story. I wanted to travel, to see how the rest of the world was different from my little corner of corn country. But the only skills I had were farming, and my only education was what I'd gotten in a one-room schoolhouse. I could read and write and arithmetic as well or better than I'd ever needed, but I was hardly good enough to get into university, even if my father didn't consider it a waste of money. So, what if I only had this life? A good life, but one that left me feeling so empty. Maybe I could find a way out. Maybe I could apprentice with someone who traveled for their career. I could learn from them, just as I had planned to learn shopkeeping from Mr. Reynolds. As I thought about these possibilities, my mind kept wandering back to the beautiful face of Señor Fanego. I knew what I really wanted, to rush after him and beg him to take me on as an apprentice, to let me travel with the troop, to learn how to work the lanterns, how to move with grace and beauty, how to tell a captivating story. Anything to spend even a little more time in his captivating presence. Afraid I might lose my courage, I sprang off my cot, grabbed my bag, and sprinted down the stairs, out of the inn, and straight out of Bloomfield after the wagons of Señor Fanego's traveling troop. Hours passed as I traveled through the night, running until I tired, then slowing to a walk. Several times I considered turning back. After all, this was crazy, chasing after a man who I'd never actually met, to beg him to take me on as an apprentice. What if Fanego said no? What if I never even caught up with the troop? What if they had turned off the main road somewhere, and I had passed them in the dark? Just as I was about to give up, I spotted a couple of campfires ahead. It was Señor Fanego's traveling troop. I had found them. I had not, however, figured out what I would say to the señor. I sat down by the road and tried to come up with an explanation for why I was there. But before I could gather my thoughts, a voice boomed behind me. I spun around.
You were right, boss. One did follow us from Bloomfield.
Bring them over into the light where I can see them, Cass.
The giant of a man who had played Count Moreno offered me his hand and guided me into the circle of firelight. I tried to stammer out my half-formed arguments for why the troop should take me on.
Hello, senor, players. My name is Samuel, and I'm a farmer, but I want to do what you do, and I'm engaged, and I can't go back.
As I said it, I knew it to be true. Even if these strange, wonderful people rejected me, I could never go back to the life that had been chosen for me. The senor was watching me closely.
Engaged to be married, but you left that behind to chase after us poor players. Why? Look into my eyes and tell me the truth. I'll know if you don't.
I stared into Señor Fanego's eyes and felt seen. Of course the señor would know if I was lying, because the man could see straight into the depths of my soul. So I stayed quiet for a moment, preparing myself to explain my discontent, my desire to experience the emotion from the story, my desire to see the world. But when I opened my mouth, all that came out was, "You're the most beautiful person I've ever laid eyes on." I was shocked that I had said that. I was also shocked to discover that it was true, truer than anything else I could have said. I would follow Señor Fanego anywhere if he'd let me, and it wouldn't matter what I left behind. Fanego nodded
as if this bold and shocking declaration from another man was exactly what he expected to hear.
"I'm sorry, my boy. I didn't mean to do it. Sometimes, when I tell my stories, my presence has this effect on people. I could feel the power of the story tonight, and knew I had probably enthralled someone. We drove the horses hard in the hopes that whoever it was would grow discouraged and turn back, but you didn't. The sun is coming up, so I am off to sleep in the wagon. Edgar will get you some food and a blanket by the fire, so that you can rest before returning to town."
The striking older man began walking toward the wagon. "Wait, I can't go back. That life, my life, it's what I've been told to want since I was a kid. I'll marry the most eligible girl in my village. I'll take over her father's business instead of breaking my back in the fields. But all I feel is resignation and a hollowness that I thought was a permanent part of my life until you told that story. And suddenly, for the first time, that hollowness was full. Please don't send me back." Fanego sighed and turned towards me. When our eyes met, I once again felt my soul laid bare before that penetrating stare. It sent a shiver down my spine, but I wasn't sure if it was caused by terror or delight. Probably both. Either way, I could only maintain that eye contact for a few exquisite seconds before having to turn away.
"Fine, you can stay, but you must treat every member of this troop as if they were your masters. They tell you to do something, you do it, without complaint. If at any time your service is unsatisfactory, I will send you packing no matter how far we have traveled from your dreary little village or what prospects you might have at that given location. Understand?"
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
"Edgar, put the boy to work. I'm going to get some sleep."
The dogman, Edgar, thrust a bowl of oatmeal into my hands.
"Eat up quickly. There's dishes to wash."
For the next year, I traveled with the troop, laundering clothes, cooking food, and cleaning anything and everything they asked me to clean. Over time, they taught me how to mend clothes and costumes, make props, work the lanterns, apply makeup, dance, and even tell the stories. But during that whole year, Señor Fanego avoided being alone with me. He taught me to tell stories, but left the other teaching to the rest of the troop. I didn't understand why. Every time I stood close to the man, my skin prickled to life, and I hungered to touch him. When he looked into my eyes, which he usually avoided doing, I saw longing, pain, sadness, and hunger there, and I wanted to comfort him. When he spoke, his voice filled my mind until nothing mattered but him, his words, and his voice. I was under no illusions that I had even close to the same effect on him, but the way he looked at me, spoke to me, moved when he was near me, told me that he did desire me too. Still, he avoided being alone with me, going so far as to forbid me from ever stepping foot inside the wagon where he slept each day. As I had promised to do on that first night, I obeyed him in this and all else. But I never stopped seeking a chance to be alone with him, to explore these feelings I had for him, feelings that had only grown over the past year as I came to know him as a kind, generous, albeit eccentric man, who found worth in every person he met. Over time, I came to realize that my attempts to get closer to Fanego were probably in vain. I didn't stop trying, but I learned to be content with the idea of simply living in his presence. Then came the day Señor Fanego kicked me out of the troop.
"Well, my boy, we have taught you all the basics of the performing arts,"
Fanego said as we sat around a campfire about an hour before dawn.
"We are just a couple miles away from a large city that has several theaters. You should have no trouble finding work in one of them. It is time for you to leave our little troop for bigger and better things."
I sat, stunned, as Fanego put down his plate and went back to his wagon. Looking around at the rest of the troop, I saw that none would meet my eye. "So you all knew this was coming, and none of you told me? And I really have to go just like that, after everything? Cass, Edgar, Maria? But they all just shuffled uncomfortably and started clearing away the dinner dishes, refusing to speak to me. I stood by the fire until I was alone. I began sobbing. Just like that, this life I had lived for a year, this life that had given me more fulfillment than the 22 years before it, was gone. I was on my own, cast aside, left to pick up the pieces. As I stood there crying, a thought came to me. I was no longer in the troop. I didn't have to follow their commands anymore, or what were they going to do? Kick me out? So I wiped my tears on my sleeve, marched over to Señor Finego's wagon, and burst in. Before I go, I demand to know why... I trailed off as I was confronted with the sight of him completely nude. If he was beautiful before, he was hauntingly, exquisitely breathtaking like this. Every line and contour of his muscles was defined to perfection, and it took all my willpower not to reach out and trace them with my fingers, leaving me none to form words. Without shame, Finego turned to face me.
Why what? Why am I letting you go? Because we are a troop of outcasts and freaks, and this life we have made together is the best we can hope for. The world doesn't make opportunities for the likes of us, so we must take them where we can. But you... Oh, you...
His eyes left mine for a moment to glance at the rest of me, and he shuddered.
A handsome, well-spoken young man like you can go far in the world, especially with the skills we have taught you. You now have the ability to live a life other than the one you were born into. Isn't that what you wanted?
This loosened my tongue. What I wanted? What I want is to stay. What I want is to be a part of this strange, wonderful family. What I want is you. I stepped forward to touch him, to kiss him, to embrace him, to love him. But a stern look from him stopped me in place.
You don't want me. You want the idea of me. You don't know who, what, I am. Besides, you are just a child.
I bristled at that. A child? So you're older than me by, what, 10, 15 years? Why does that matter in the face of how we feel? And I know you feel it, too. As far as who you are the kindest, most thoughtful person I have ever met in my entire life. What more do I need to know?
800 years.
What?
800 years is how much older I am than you, or near enough as to make no difference.
I didn't know what I had expected him to say, but it wasn't that.
How?
He sat down on his bed, looking away from me as he spoke softly.
The first story you ever saw us perform, The Tale of Sir Anthony, is an original story written by me. It is also autobiographical, if changed a bit to be palatable to my audiences.
You mean? His mesmerizing eyes met mine.
I am Sir Antonio Finego, but Dolingen wasn't an angel. She was one of the undying, a vampire. She took pity on me as I lay dying on the battlefield and made me one of them. I have questioned whether or not the action was truly merciful many times over the centuries. But now you know. You know why you and I can never be, even if you overcome any revulsion you have to my inhumanity. I cannot do this. My choices are this: to be your first lover, only to cast you aside, or stay with you, watching you grow old and eventually die, leaving me as many lovers have left me before. I can't do the first to you, and I can't go through the second again.
But what if I agree to the first? What if I tell you that I accept that it must be short-lived, and that afterwards I will go on my way, happy to have had something with you? Antonio shook his head.
You can't know what you're agreeing to, You have never had a lover before. I can't.
Is there really no other way? I want you more than anything in the world. I love you. His eyes fell, and he wrapped his arms around himself in a gesture of vulnerability I had never seen from him before. It made me want to wrap him in my arms and hold him close.
Samuel, there is one way. But it means giving up so much. It means giving up any chance at normalcy. It means giving up the sun. It means giving up humanity.
His eyes met mine, and I understood what he meant, what he wasn't asking, what he wanted so desperately to ask. I stayed silent. It was a lot to take in all at once. Living forever? Me? That was an entirely different question from being willing to love Antonio as he was, and one I had to think about. Antonio's voice was low and sad.
I understand. Ask Maria to give you a little bit of money from the coffers so you can get started in the city. It was wonderful to know you, Samuel. I will always remember the quiet farm boy who risked everything to find a life where he could be whole.
Wait, what? Harold bolted upright in the bed. You just left? Was that when you came to the city a decade ago? Did they really give you enough money to open your own theater? Samuel smiled. No, Harold. That happened 70 years ago. I stayed with Antonio for 40 more years. Then we agreed to go our separate ways. There was a whole world for me to explore, and he wanted to stay with the troupe, where he felt like he was doing good for a whole new generation of outcasts. So I set out, saw the world, made my fortune, then used it to open my theater here. Harold's eyes widened. Wait, does that mean he turned you? That you are... His voice trailed off. He sounded more excited than frightened. Samuel nodded. Then he showed Harold the 2 puncture scars on his neck, and opened his mouth to reveal his fangs. Harold looked dazed. Why? I mean, don't think I don't appreciate you sharing all this with me. But why are you telling this to me, now, when you've kept your past a secret for so long? Because I like you, Harold. A lot. I know that the perception in this city is that I am just sleeping my way through every willing man and leaving a trail of heartbreak behind me. But when you are what I am, when you don't age, time doesn't mean the same thing. I have spent the last 10 years looking for a long-term companion. Futilely until, I hope, now. I love you, Harold. And I want to spend a lifetime with you. Longer, if you're willing. But that would mean giving up any chance at normalcy. Giving up the sun. Giving up humanity. Harold looked into the eyes of the man he had admired, then loved from a distance for years, then loved up close for the past 6 months. Normalcy? What is that to deviants like us? The sun? I am a stage actor. I sleep all day anyway. And humanity? People already consider me less than human for who I love. So you're not asking me to give up much I haven't already given up to live my life. Without breaking eye contact with Samuel, Harold tilted his head to the side, presenting the naked skin of his neck and shoulder. Make me yours, Sammy. After a pause, Samuel raised himself up, looming over Harold, and then fell upon him. Harold felt the exquisite pain of Samuel's fangs puncturing his skin, followed by a wave of overwhelming pleasure radiating out from the bite. It was ecstasy. Thank you for listening to The Proposal. If you have enjoyed this story, please be sure to check out past episodes in the podcast, subscribe on your favorite podcast directory, and share it with anyone who you think might enjoy it. If you would like to support Wild Speculation, as well as get a few perks, please join us at patreon.com/wildspeculation. To stay up to date with everything going on the podcast, as well as any other projects I'm working on, be sure to follow me at facebook.com/wildspeculation and twitter.com/wspeculation. If you are looking for more queer-centric stories, you should check out the Unafraid Podcast, a podcast of true stories from the LGBTQ community.
Hi everyone, I'm Jay, host of the Unafraid Podcast. On Unafraid, I share stories from the queer community that help us to grow, learn, and understand that while we are all different, there is an immeasurable beauty in that diversity. The Unafraid Podcast is my labor of love, and I want to share that love with you. New stories are aired each week, so you can check out Unafraid on your podcast distributor right now.
You can find the Unafraid Podcast, Wild Speculation, and many other great podcasts at projectentertainmentnetwork.com. This has been Wild Speculation. Until next time, let your imagination run wild.